Welcome to the Architect My Life podcast. I'm Maya Schlachter, serial entrepreneur and CEO of the MGS Global Group, where we serve architecture and design firms with project delivery, such as drafting, 3D visualization, and graphics production support. I am also the founder of Architect My Life. My goal is to help creative entrepreneurs such as architects and other design-related professionals scale their business to six or seven figures. I also show them how it's possible to do this while living a rich life outside their work, reclaiming time and energy for themselves and their families. Creatives were taught how to master their craft, but not taught how to run and grow a business. Each podcast episode features a different entrepreneur from the creative industry who shares their journey towards success. If you have a growth story that others in our community could benefit from hearing, stick around to the end of the show to see how you could be a guest in one of our future episodes. Now, let's dive into this episode.
Okay, welcome to Architect My Life podcast, where we interview creative entrepreneurs on their journey. My name is Betty Quimby. I'm your host. And joining us today is Rachel Meekum. Rachel is an interior designer with Gensler. And Rachel, we're so happy to have you today. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm glad to be here.
Great. Yes, I'm so glad to have you. And I was just commenting on your background picture. It's so lovely because all these colors, and it's like a candid shot of your background picture of you doing your thing in the office. So I love it. And, you know, I would love to start off by just asking you, like, when did you realize that you wanted to be a designer? When was it that you realized that?
It was actually in high school. So I was fortunate enough that my high school offered two different classes. One was architecture, where we did drafting, and then another was specifically on interior design. And I'd had a friend in junior high that her mother was an interior designer on the residential side. And so I kind of knew a little bit about it, but it wasn't really until taking those classes that my interest was really piqued. I liked how especially the commercial side of design really combined the technical with the arts. And so it kind of played on that left brain, right brain thing, and just, you know, a different facet, if you will.
Yeah, that's cool. And I love that your high school offered that. Where did you grow up? Where was it?
I was up in the Plano area. So I actually went to Carrollton School District. And so it was a newer class that they had just started offering. So
that's amazing. Okay, awesome. And then, like, you know, through your journey, I know you said you had some teachers that, well, you said about the classes that you took. Did you have any specific mentors that maybe really played a part in this, or that you strongly influenced you?
I mean, in terms of going into commercial design, I had one teacher, Gail Van Akron, when I was at TCU, and she actually still did a practice. She was an adjunct professor, and so still had a foot in the industry, and just really taught our class a ton. But for me in general, I'll never forget when we were talking about internships and what's the next step and where do we go? And she had said, I have this one firm. It's probably the hardest firm to work for in the Metroplex. And that was Stoffelbach. And I raised my hand and was like, I want that. How do I do that? How do I apply? How do I get in? And that was my first internship, which turned into my first job. And I was there for almost 8 years.
Wow. You took the hardest one. She's like, well, this really hard one. And you're like, that's the one I want. You wanted the challenge.
It's known as, like, the firm itself has always been known as a really great learning ground. I actually got to work directly under the owner, and it was an amazing mentorship period. So it was just one of those, like, you know, there's so many things about design. You just have to learn by hands-on, and as great as school can be and as fun as it is, there's nothing like real world experience. And it was one of those, like, aha moments, especially knowing the idea of commercial versus residential design for me.
Okay. So commercial versus residential, what do you lean towards then?
So I focus on commercial design, although I do dabble in, I'll say, the residential side. And obviously we're seeing trending towards more hospitality. And, you know, now that we're all stuck in our homes, it's definitely very residential in a sense, but, you know, it's just, it was that, again, that idea of technicality that was still really involved in the commercial side that got piqued my interest, because I also minored in lighting. Oh. So I kind of got the best of both worlds that way.
That's interesting. And what does what does the lighting have to do with it? Like, can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I'm not familiar with that.
Well, I mean, lighting in general, obviously, it affects everything, how we perceive the world. And so just that that understanding of the impact of light on a space and how it, we talk about color and how it makes us feel. Well, light is the same way. And, we've heard a lot, especially in the last few years, about blue light and how bad it is for us and the negative side effects of it. And it's just the ability to be able to understand how you're impacting the space in a very different way. And it adds another level to it. So it was a really interesting thing. At the time, TCU was one of the only schools that had offered the minor. I'm not sure if anyone else does or not. Mm-hmm. Most of the time you have to actually go into major for lighting. And then a lot of people will go on eventually and get like their LPC to get kind of like your NCIDQ for lighting.
Okay.
So it was just, another level of, adding technical knowledge to interior design, because lighting is very technical. So,
That's so cool. Thanks for elaborating on that.
I'm
so interested to hear about this. So now that you're working for a big firm now, which, how do you pronounce the company's name once more? Is it Gensler?
Gensler. Yeah.
Okay. I pronounced it right. Okay.
Yep.
So Gensler, what is your biggest challenge or obstacle working for a big firm as a woman? What is there an obstacle being a female design person?
Gensler is really good about promoting, I'll say, anyone across the board in terms of their approach to diversity, inclusivity, et cetera. They're very open. And I will say, just having worked, I loved Stoffelbach in my first experience there, but their structure was very much like a pyramid. So there was the owner and everything kind of dominoed off that. And you knew you were never going to make it to the top of that pyramid, if you will, because they owned the firm. It was their money that they invested in. It's not something that they would just hand off. Where at this point, with Gensler being a larger firm, and it's almost like you have obviously sub firms within that, we all operate as one and leverage each other. But, there's a lot of opportunity for growth even within the local firm itself. So it operates more like a tree. And the one thing I've really found is if there's something that I get really passionate about or really want to go tackle, I have to just bring it up to leadership and say, here's my idea. Here's what I'd like to do. Here's why I think it's important, and pitch it. And then they will support you in that.
That's awesome. And
yeah. So it's been a lot of fun. And I think the biggest thing with working for a big firm has been opportunity for growth in a very different way. Obviously, working at a smaller firm, you get stretched broader at a younger age. When you're at a larger firm, probably, as you grow into the industry, the nice thing is that you kind of know your path at that point. And so where do I want to go and what do I want to do? And granted, that's changed for me over the past few years even, but it's been that idea of having leadership that's willing to continue to support you in that and push you up that ladder because they want you to succeed. And obviously, so our South Central region, which is what Texas is a part of.
Okay.
We actually have the two co-regional directors are both women. So they're very supportive of, women moving up into leadership roles. And then we just had a couple women get promoted to principal last year in the local Dallas office. So, we're constantly seeing that. And it's exciting to watch that balance out a little bit more, because at one point we were very male dominated, even within the principals. But, there is opportunity for everyone, really. And that's the exciting part. Yeah.
That is really great. That's so positive. I'm so glad that I asked you that, because
yeah,
it's such a great response. Okay, cool. So if how many people are in this company roughly? Like you said, the other one was smaller. The pyramid was smaller. Mm-hmm. The tree.
Yeah.
How many people are in the company?
So at Gensler, we're a worldwide firm. So we actually have around 5,000 to 6,000 people. I'm not sure post COVID where we've landed. Because there was some furloughs and all that fun stuff, but that's the nature of this industry. So, but we've done really well through it all. But Our local Dallas office is about sitting at 250 right now.
Okay.
So still pretty large because the firm I was first at was about 75 people. So still considered a large firm for design. Wow. But, you know, going from that to when I started at Gensler, there was 133. That was I don't want to say a huge shock, but it was at the same time. Like it was fun. And I did get to know everyone. At 250, it's a lot harder to know everyone and all the new faces. And sometimes I am like, are you a client, a rep, or do you work here?
It's like when you're at Target and there's like someone in a red shirt and you're like, excuse me, like, I don't work here. Like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. You had the red shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So
250 in your office where you are. Okay.
Yeah.
So based on that number, how do you stand out in a firm? If there's 250 people, what do you do to stand out as an interior designer? Are you more of a team player? Like how do you stand out?
So I think that's how each person gets to differentiate themselves. So my passion is probably two things. One, client relationships. Those are that's where my personal skill set lies. If you know anything about Enneagrams, I'm an Enneagram 2.
I don't. What is
that? And so, oh my gosh. So have you done any of the personality tests?
Oh, yes, yes. Like the I, C,
Yeah, so letters. Like the MTBI. Yes. So I'm an ESFJ on that scale. But then Enneagrams it's not new, but it's become more popular in the last few years. Really fun. There's a ton of great Instagram accounts you can go look at that have like fun drawings, and you can do the quiz online for free. But it's a great thing. I've actually had some of my teammates do it just so I could understand and relate to them better, because that's helped us from a team structure to connect.
Nice.
But this also filters back into, you know, kind of where I go with my passions within design. And so I really enjoy the client relationship aspect. And that's probably helped me move into, I'll say, a hybrid role. So I still dabble in design and still work on design, but I'm also doing management at the same time.
Managing managing the projects, like going between the designer and the customer, basically, or the client?
Well, so I've done both, to where like some projects I'm the designer and the manager.
Okay.
So I'm kind of doing it all, if you will, in that sense. I still have the team working alongside me, but I'm kind of that primary point of contact.
Okay.
And, you know, it depends on project size, et cetera, but I wear a lot of hats. And so that's been a nice thing. But then kind of outside of that, differentiating myself, technology is a huge passion for me. My dad was in tech growing up. My brother is in tech now. And, you know, some days I'm like, should I have gone into tech?
Yeah.
but I still like that creative side. So this kind of filters into that. And so the way Gensler has broken kind of their studios down has been what they call practice areas. And so specifically, I focus on the technology practice area. And so that was something I started getting involved with a few years ago. And then, you know, because everyone kind of saw my passion for it, some things I was working on, ideas I was coming up with, I got the tap on the shoulder and was like, hey, we would like you to lead the practice area for the Dallas office.
Cool.
And so that's been a really fun opportunity. It stretched me a lot because there's a lot of things I never thought I would ever have to do in design. And it's one of those where you look back and you go, I wish I'd paid more attention to that class in school.
We've all been there.
You know, just, I mean, everything from, you know, business development to understanding market trends and marketing. So you kind of get to touch a wider breadth of things and projects. And, you know, again, it ties back to client relationships. And, you know, we believe it all begins and ends with the client. And that's
Absolutely.
The most important thing.
Yeah, so, that's so cool. I love that because I identify with you. I love people. I'm a people person.
Mm-hmm.
So like when you say client relationships, I'm like, that's me. Like I like people.
Yeah.
That's so cool. So you kind of already mentioned this about furloughs and things, but how has COVID affected your workplace in your current job, or you specifically? Have you lost any partners in this, or has it affected you? How?
I mean, we did have several projects go on hold. There were some that kind of went on a short hold because it was like the wait and see. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll see what happens. We don't know where we're going. We still have a couple that they're trying to restructure and figure out, okay, how does this domino into our future? And what other changes do we need to make? And then we've had other clients that have been like, okay, here's where we're going. Let's pull the trigger and run with it. So it's been a huge spectrum in that regard for Gensler ourselves. Obviously, we're still working from home. But I think we've really found the opportunity for new tools to integrate us in different ways. Okay. One of the ones we use is called the Miro board. Ooh. And it's just a fun collaboration tool where as a team, you can drop all sorts of things on a single board, whether it's like if you're in concept design, all the images you're culling together for different parts of the project, plans and sketch on top of it and do some other things. And then you can all congregate and look at the board and see who's working on what and what they've pulled. And you can do that at any time, but then you can also get together and follow through. You can present from it. And it's been a really, yeah, it's been a really fluid tool that we've really enjoyed. And
spell that M-I-R-O. M-I-R-O. Miro
yep.
board.
That's Miro right. board. Yep.
Okay. That's so, cool. Very
yeah.
Cool.
It's a really robust product and they continue to add features all the time. So it's just something we've liked. And I think we continue to see people develop new ideas on how to use it and transform it. And so it's been a really fun opportunity. One, it hits my technology nerd side. Yes. So I get to learn new products and do that. But I was also able to stretch my team and we became early adopters of some of this stuff. Our firm is pretty much standardized on like Microsoft using MS Teams and other things. But I like Slack. So I kind of pushed my team and was like, let's use this. And so we kind of came up with some fun ways to be able to track projects and deadlines and, you know, put some different things in that format versus like OneNote or other things. And it just, where you could easily ping people and it yeah, just, you know, it's, it kind of took us in a different direction to understand, okay, how can I tap someone on the shoulder without physically tapping them on the shoulder?
Like poking on Facebook.
Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. Cause when you tag someone, it'll send them a little notification, which is nice. And, you know, it'll send you a reminder if you haven't responded. So there's been different ways to do that. And it's not the, you know, either walking up and interrupting you at work or,
right.
you know,
there
someone,
is that
someone
difference.
Yeah. Or someone emails you and then it gets lost in the myriad of emails that you get every day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot to manage.
And then of course, video chatting has been huge. And, you know, while there are some people, like I still get together every so often with my boss and we have to look at project stuff or, you know, meet out for a drink or something just because some people haven't been comfortable with that. And that's been fine. And, you know, we just kind of make things work. And the nice thing has been their flexibility. So
that's great. It sounds like you took a huge positive spin on that question. I appreciate that. The advantages of, well, I got to learn new things. I got a leadership mm-hmm. role, you know,
yeah.
stepping into my own and we're finding out new things. So that's very positive. And that was actually, that was the next question. Unexpected positive outcomes or lessons. How about some lessons you learned? Any lessons you learned? You told me some positive outcomes.
Let's see, lessons this last year. I mean, the power of the phone call.
Oh.
So video chat is great. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness for that. But in terms of meetings, like there is one side of it where, okay, meetings, it's nice when because people have to be a little more focused, although you can see when people pull their phone up under the screen and you're like, you're not listening. And that is what it is. But the reality is the power of the phone call, because for me, it's caused me to create weekly touch points with different clients just so I can call them. I enjoy talking to them and connecting more again on that human level. So
you're talking about calling the power of a phone call for you calling clients.
Well, clients, reps.
Okay.
You know, I think especially the younger generation, one of the I'll say bad habits that have formed is firing off a quick email and being like, hey, I need the sample tomorrow. Can you send this over? Instead of picking up the phone and saying, hey, how are you? I have a project. I would love to get some samples from you. Here's what I'm needing. I'm going to follow up with an email. even if you just leave them a voicemail, but it lets them know, one, they're going to follow up with an email about the project anyway and ask you right. questions. Right. But it's just that, again, it's a personal touch. They could ask you additional questions, be like, hey, we have this new product, and you're not going to get that via email. If you don't describe, like, here's the size, here's the location, here's kind of what I'm looking for. Like, there are certain things you just miss out on when it's email.
Yes.
And yes. so I think that's been a huge lesson this year, just as that reminder of just pick up the phone. It's okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I see what you mean. It's almost like the culture of like hiding behind a computer, like, mm-hmm. like hiding or like texting, you know, the younger generation just text, but then they don't answer the call. Like you yeah. call and you're like, why don't you answer the phone?
I think we get into the mindset of efficiency, which is great on one hand, but then we lose out on the relationship on the other end of it. And, you know, no matter who it is in the industry, from client to vendor mm-hmm. to everyone in between, even your coworkers, I make sure I touch base with my coworkers via phone, or, you know, it's just that idea of, hey, someone cared enough to pick up the phone and talk to me.
That's cool.
So,
that's yeah. very cool. Thank you. I love that. What are the most important personality traits that you have or someone needs to have to work for a big company? What personality traits?
Personality traits. Gosh, this is where I'm like, what defines a personality trait specifically?
Yeah. You're kind of already talking.
The relationship part is a huge one. Some people know that they're just better focused and, hey, this is what I want to do. And you can still do that at a large firm. Mm-hmm. We have some people that, you know what, all they want to do is CDs, and that's okay. We need those people.
Yeah.
You know, we have people that all they want to do is very technical things, and that's great. But I think at the end of the day, there's that idea of being the team player. And I know it stretches us a lot. And I think the willingness to learn and absorb new things, because no matter what level you're at, there's always something to learn, whether it's communication style mm-hmm. and how am I talking to my peers, my junior designers, or leadership. You know, there's always something we can be learning. And so that's, you know, those are probably a couple really big things, but I would say it's not any different for a small firm, honestly. Okay. I mean, okay. you know, the biggest things that end up setting you apart at any firm seem to be portfolio and the quality and breadth of your work.
Okay.
You know, does the work speak for itself? And as long as you can talk intelligently about it and say, here's why I'm a good fit, you know, there's always a way to get in the door. It's always good to meet people again, networking face to face, you know, be able to put your name out there, especially with a larger firm. I would say having an in with someone to know is a much better way to get in the door versus just submitting a resume.
Yes, but, absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, in any firm, even the 75 person firm, like I was lucky in that I had a recommendation, someone that, you know, carried my resume and said, hey, I know this person. I think they'd be a great fit for you. And so those are always the things, you know, we don't necessarily talk about that anymore, but people go back to, oh, you went to school at TCU. Oh, so did I. And there's a connection.
Right.
And so it's always, you know, we're always a few degrees of connection from something, whether it's a job or a different opportunity or, you know, a new client. There's always something that's going to connect us at some level. And it's just a matter of finding that.
That's cool. Thank you. Yeah, that's amazing. And now you are in a firm now, a larger company, but what would be your dream project? Like if you had one project that you're like, this is my dream, I've always wanted to work on this or work with this person or do this thing, what would be your dream project?
Oh my gosh, dream project.
Anything, your biggest dream project.
Anything tropical? That I have to travel to.
Okay. That's a dream project. Yeah. Like where?
But,
like travel where?
I mean, oh my gosh. Honestly, working on a project overseas probably would be a really cool thing just from getting to travel over there to see it. I love personally like traveling anywhere over in Europe.
Wow.
But But just, again, I think it's a stretching thing, right? You know, having to really focus on expanding my knowledge of metric and different codes and, you know, what their style is very different and expectations are different. And so,
I think learning and growing. So figuring out that thing, researching that thing, and then going there.
I'm very much a person that has to continue to be stretched. Otherwise I get bored. And then when I get bored, I just kind of, I don't like stagnating. Let's put it that way.
I can relate to that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, that's so cool. Well, if you know, now that we're talking about dreams, because we're going to wrap up here pretty soon, but I wanted to at least ask you, where do you see yourself in 3 years? Do you see, where are you still here? Are you doing bigger projects? Is the company growing and you're leading further? Are you doing your own thing? What do you think?
I think there's probably kind of a twofold in that. I do see myself moving and continuing to move up in terms of management roles. You know, right now I'm still chipping away at that at Gensler and trying to continue to expand my own knowledge and my own network. So that is a goal. You know, kind of next steps for me is like our senior associate title. And then, you know, what does like this technology practice area lead into? What additional project work can I take on? And what clients can I help to bring in the door? So then expand upon our own expertise and get out there in the market and capture more of it. But then outside of that, I think there's probably an on the side thing for me that's in a totally different vein than this. So I have some kind of side passions that I've kind of put off and I keep putting off. But
side passions?
Probably a couple things. And I'm still trying to figure it out where I'm being called in this and what it will look like. But I actually have a ton of blog posts already written that I've kind of done for years, and I just kind of kept kicking it off. And it's more around the lines of impacting women and just that idea of
what this is.
I know.
This is what Aya is passionate about. That's amazing.
Yeah. And it's, but it's more of that idea of like self-confidence, not necessarily career focused, but just that day to day. You know, I feel like I've gone through a lot in my life in terms of just some different experiences that many women go through. And sometimes it's that we get a lot of shame and guilt surrounding those things. And how do we overcome that? And, you know, how do we learn things? And I'm really terrible about this, but not saying I'm sorry for everything.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Do you ever read Brené Brown?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Shame and vulnerability. Yep.
I know. Yep. And it's hard. It's hard to put yourself out there. And that's probably what's been the biggest thing holding me back is that idea of being vulnerable with people. And, you know, are people going to judge you? And it's like, well, they are, but how, you know, learning to disconnect from that and say what matters at the end of the day. And I think that's, again, that core value that we all have to focus on, especially as women. I feel like guys are just like, whatever, but, you know, and it's that idea of women supporting women.
That's amazing. Wow. What a great like way to like put it all together and wrap it up. Rachel, you've been so awesome and you're so interesting. And I love your perspective on everything we've talked about. And, you know, I would love for people to know how to find you just in case they wanted to connect with you. Or are you willing to give out maybe some information where they can find you, a website or your email address or something anyway?
Sure. I mean, obviously on Instagram, I'm r.e.design. So that's a really easy way to find me and connect. And then my email is remecum@mac.com.
Mecum@mac.com. Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Rachel. You've been a pleasure.
No, this was great. No, it was very nice to meet you, Betty. Such fun.
Yes, thank you so much. So once again, I'm Betty Quimby with Architect My Life, and this was Rachel Mecum. So thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Architect My Life podcast. We'd love to hear from you on social media using the hashtag Architect My Life podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram @Aya_ArchitectMyLife. That's Aya, A-Y-A, @architectmylife. And for women firm owners, I invite you to join the Architect My Life private Facebook group. If you haven't already, we'd appreciate it if you'd subscribe to the show, as well as rate or review us wherever you access podcasts. And if you think you have something to add to the conversation through your success running a business, we invite you to apply to be a guest in one of our upcoming episodes. Visit architectmylife.com/podcast to learn more. Maybe you're not in a position to share your success story yet. That's okay. Take your business to the next level with our coaching and online courses. Get everything you need at architectmylife.com. Remember, there is a way to manage it all so you can achieve more. I'm Aya Schlachter. Thanks again for listening.